Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Seattle Restaurant Podcast. In front of me, he said he didn't get a bunch of rest, but he's smiling. He looks beautiful. He's glowing. David Van Storm, how you doing, brother?
Doing good, Sid.
You look great. What's happening? How's the week?
The week was good. It was, I don't know, the weekdays have been kind of like steady, and then the weekends have been pretty popping.
Yeah.
But I'm also, you know, I'm moving out of my house, and so that's been keeping me busy. New staff, still killing it.
Yeah, how's sous chef?
Great.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been, what, 2 weeks, a week?
Yeah, we're going into his third week.
And that's huge.
The new bar manager's third week as well, and they're both doing exactly what I hired them to do, which is awesome, man.
That's amazing. Man, I had a fun week. We had Foodie Fest on Saturday, and I went to the first one. Our previous guest, Max High from Sam Choi, Poke on the Max, he puts it on at the Stoneway Cafe down in Rainier Beach. And
are you sure you're saying that right?
As soon as I said it, I go, fuck, am I saying that right? But anyway, thank you, Max. Unfortunately, it kind of got rained out. Little bit of a bummer.
Oh, that was a crazy little storm, wasn't
it? So beautiful day while I'm prepping, beautiful while I'm loading up the trailer. Get there is beautiful for the load in, and then just like it was a 4 to 9 event, and like, you know, from like 5:30 to 8, it was kind of just
like all of a sudden, like the clouds rolled in, the winds picked up, and the temperature dropped like 20 degrees.
And I will say, you know, around 8, it was supposed to go to 9, around like 7:30. I'm like facing the water, and this beautiful rainbow appears. I'm like, dude, guys, I think we're gonna be okay. I bet everyone's coming now, and no one came. But no, it was still a fun event.
No, our business plummeted when that rolled through.
But you know, I mean, you remember street food, like those days where you're like, it's so weather dependent event like that, like something like Foodie Fest. But anyway, hey, we got some heavy hitters in the garage today. On my left, Justin Kana, how we doing, brother?
I'm doing super well. Thanks for having me on.
For people that don't know, you're similar to me and Dave, where you have a couple of things in the basket. Name some of the things that you do.
Yeah, totally. So I was in Michelin kitchens for almost 10 years. Moved to Seattle, started doing pop up events and, you know, trying to make a name for myself. I was super convinced that I was going to make a like content studio X restaurant kind of concept. Are you familiar with Fallow in the UK?
I am
the restaurant that like shoots a bunch of content. They have multiple restaurants now. They just hit 1 million followers on Instagram. Like, very similar to what those guys are doing.
Right.
Came to the realization that I like teaching more than being quote unquote famous.
Yeah.
And so I launched an alternative to culinary school. So it's called Total Station Domination, and I basically specialize teaching in how to take people from either no restaurant experience, or maybe you did go through culinary school, but you're frustrated with the fact that, you know, you're not able to perform on your station at work.
Right. And this is in person.
Both in person and all online.
Both in person and online. Cool. So I'll work with people one on one, but yeah, it's mostly online.
I cannot wait to talk about this. Over on my right, a legend in the Seattle industry. How we doing, Travis? Good morning.
I'm doing great.
Travis, tell us what you own.
I have a place called the North Star Diner. I also have a bar called the Shanghai Room right here in Greenwood. Congratulations on season 2, guys.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
thanks,
season 2.
Man. Those are some reputable spots, man.
Yeah. And how I should know this, but how long have those institutions been there?
I have been in the building since April 2015, so I'm just at 9 years. We opened July 2015, so we have our birthday coming up this summer.
Nice. That's amazing.
Yeah, 9 years.
And man, you survived a quarantine, and you know, it's
you gonna do a big thing next year for the 10?
I think for the 10th, yeah. Probably not for 9. We might just skip it.
Right.
But for 10, certainly something big. Provided we're still there, you never know. It's crazy out there.
It's a wild world, man.
It is a wild world.
And for those that don't know, well, describe the North Star, and then describe Shanghai Room.
Well, North Star originally opened up as a 24-hour restaurant, and after the pandemic, we kind of scaled back, and we do breakfast and lunch and kind of like a dinner sort of program. We've got a big patio. It's breakfast-driven food. And then the Shanghai Room is it's old Seattle. I mean, that's like kind of where we started and ended with that. It's a dark, divey, quote unquote, type of bar with some good cocktails and a lot of cheap drinks, and we do a lot of karaoke
and a lot of some comedy and a lot of fun stuff. And did you open both at the same time?
They both opened at the same time.
What was the thought behind that?
Been to the Horseshoe in Bellingham.
I have not.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a clock. It's a little bit of a, we had seen it somewhere else. And
yeah.
We were like, hey, it's, a lot of times, like, the space dictates what you're going to do.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there was a huge, there was two rooms, you know, and it's like, what do you do with these two rooms? Do you make it one thing or big do you do separate things? Or is this one going to be private or you just ignore that? Or and one big kitchen. So what just happened was one place became a bar and one place became, like, a very, you know, accessible area for everybody.
Yeah, I love it. And you see that, you know, like, I think Smoke Shop is kind of similar. And you see that a lot of Chinese restaurants, I feel like, where, like...
It works.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
It's comfortable.
Yeah, I in my drinking days, I spent a lot of time at a place called Wang's over in Lake City, where it's like, you know, they, it's like the two choices. It's like you can go hang out with families, or you can go to, like, to the very dark, like, bar, and spend a lot of time at the bar. It's fun. All right, Justin, let's talk about this school. So, so right now, let's say I'm working in line, never had any culinary training, and I want to hone up on my skills. I hit you up, and what happens?
Totally. So I start everybody off with an evaluation that I give called a station score. Okay. So it's across 9 different metrics on how to prepare, perform, and problem solve. Yep. And, like, when I graduated from culinary school, that was, like, the big ringer that was missing, where it was like, oh, well, in this, I call it, like, the fun house environment, where it's like, where when you're in the bouncy house of culinary school and you only have to make one plate with two other students that are working with you on it, and you just have to present it to your, you know, practical instructor and be like, here's the, you know, sauce meunier, whatever that I made. And it's like, oh, I followed the recipe and everything's perfect. Like, of course you can excel.
And you went to CIA?
Yeah, I went to CIA, graduated, and it was like, well, cool, cool. But then in my interview, sitting down with the guy who was going for 3 Michelin stars on my first job out of culinary school, he didn't want to hire me because he was like, well, have you worked a station? And I was like, no.
Yep.
And I respect him for that. I was like,
but at the time, you're like, I just spent $20,000.
Totally. Like, it's like and it becomes this dime a dozen thing where so many people are coming out of these institutions, and it's like, well, do you have the skills to back it up?
Yep.
Like, on a Tuesday night, yeah, you can probably crush it, but it's like when Saturday comes around, it's like when it gets busy, or
that's when they fold.
Plate gets sent back. It's like, what's going to go down here?
Yeah.
And where I got frustrated is, like, where are the frameworks being taught for how to do those problem solving? You know, like, speak up when you know you're not going to have enough, or, you know, like, when you feel like you're behind and you're not going to set up, like, can we role play those situations in an educational environment with someone who has almost, I'm coming up on 15 years in the industry, like, being able to talk you through kind of like how to have these conversations.
Are these people doing it one-on-one with you?
And in group environments.
Okay.
So that tends to be the most kind of, like, impactful for people, because it's like, oh, cool, I'm able to kind of, like, and I set it up as a hypothetical situation for people where it's like, oh, these aren't my coworkers that I'm having this role play conversation with. And I can, you know, kind of, like, speak up, and it's a fictional dish that Justin came up with 20 minutes ago. So it's like, it doesn't feel so personal, and then people are much more willing to open up. And then it's like those ripples kind of, like, make their way throughout their week where they have the ability to, you know, say, oh, cool, like, I can actually step up to the plate. I can perform. And then my sous chef's going to notice that. And then it's like, you guys have all, you know, had enough restaurant days where it's like, that's how promotions happen.
Yeah.
It's not the corporate grind of, like, you know, jockeying, having to brown nose to your boss and, like, go out to the, you know, sales dinner. And then, like, that's how you're going to get the promotion. It's really just like the sous chefs are sitting around at the table and they're like, Sid's fucking crushing it right now.
Yep.
Like, when Brandon leaves, I think we should give Sid the sous chef position.
Right.
And so, like, I try to take those in the back of my mind when I'm, like, making my materials, because it's like, I really want this to be practical. I really want this to be accessible. My program's also 9 weeks long. It's not 2 years of your life. Because I think people, you know, run into that paradox too with culinary education, where it's like, oh, well, it's like, it's so necessary. And it's like, it's the most important thing, but then it's like, it doesn't actually play out, and people get frustrated with how people are perceived. But then at the same time, it's like, oh, well, it's taking too long. And it's like, well, it has to be faster. So, like, trying to thread that needle is what I...
Where's the school located?
So when I do one-on-one stuff, it's like, I'll go to the restaurant and work with somebody one-on-one.
Which
so
restaurant?
Like, anybody's restaurant.
Got it.
Yeah. So I don't have a physical location.
Got it.
So all my stuff is remote, and that allows me to work with people from all over the world. And so, yeah, that's what I work on.
Let's say I'm a line cook. Do I just, like, ask chef permission? Like, hey, is it cool if this guy comes in? Like,
yeah, exactly.
And are chefs open to that?
And it's usually the reverse. So it's usually the executive chef or the sous chef who, like, follows my stuff and is like, hey, listen, like, I either have, like, a team that's really struggling, or, like, I'm really opening a new concept, and it's like, I need my team to be able to focus on concept number one.
Right.
Concept number two, like, I'm rebuilding the team. Like, I need people to be able to actually perform. And then I basically come in and either spend however long they need. It's anywhere from, like, just a weekend to, like, 2 weeks is kind of, like, the max that I'll spend with people.
Give me an example of, like, you know, you're talking about, like, how to fix stuff when you're, like, in the shit.
Yeah,
when
something happens. I have questions about
that. Like, totally. what's an example of, like, hey, a problem, solve it.
Yeah. So I have a kind of four quadrant kind of framework here where like it's almost like there's two axes. So it's like, do you know how to improve or do you not know how to improve? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, are you sure of what to do or are you not sure of what to do? And so it's like, if you know how to improve it and you know what to do, then you just fix it. If you don't know what to do and you know that it can be improved, it's just an ask a question kind of thing. And I think people having that like flow chart in their brain of like, well, I know this is a problem and I don't know how to fix it. It's like, well, I probably need to speak up in this situation. And it's like giving those people the frameworks to be able to like in the adrenaline heat of the moment, any one of us have seen a line cook just kind of like melt down, yep, just completely like get too insular. I play a lot of tennis and it's like you can see on the court when somebody gets in their opponent's head and it's, yep, like they just start okay, making mishits.
Calm down, get it together.
Yeah, get it together.
You you said, you know, you've done a lot of mission stuff. You worked at some of the big names, like, for example...
Yeah, French Laundry, Grace, Lies Verkett.
You know, and you don't have to speak too much on it, but, you know, well, let's just be honest. Like, you know, there's a lot of rumors about, like, the abuse that, like, especially, sure, like, French Laundry and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. How do you... I don't know what you've experienced or, mm-hmm, if you want to talk about it, but, mm-hmm, like, growing up, you know, me and Dave have talked about it. We kind of grew up in, like, you know, having plates and shit thrown at us, and we talk about how to train people now. You know, when did that cycle break for you? Like, were you ever that chef where, sure, like, you know, you were like, you know, you worked at, like, per se, you know, some big names where you kind of have to be a hot shot.
Totally.
When did that cycle break for you? And when were you like, there's a better way to teach people?
I don't know if this happened in like the mid 20 knots, but like I came out of culinary school in like early like 2010s kind of era.
Okay, yeah.
And I think the listeners can probably correct me if I'm wrong here, but like a lot of the throwing plates and the visible forms of abuse kind of shifted for me, I'll speak just for myself here, into the more like unseen forms of abuse. I tell a quick story of like when I was working at Per Se as an extern, went to French Laundry as a chef de partie, and the executive sous chef of Per Se went from Per Se to be the chef de cuisine of French Laundry. So, mm-hmm, he knew me from that time.
Yep.
And after my externship at Per Se, I ate and had a meal with my dad.
Yep.
Who was like, you know, he immigrant parent, you know, took a chance on me, was like, you know, you want to go do this chef thing? Like, are you sure you're going to make this work? And that meal at Per Se was really like this, oh my goodness, this is cool. Like, I see where you're going with this.
Yep.
And there was one day at French Laundry where I was just like, I was so behind. I'd like messed up a couple plate ups and then the tickets started stacking and I needed to do more. And like, I hadn't had things quite portioned yet. So I was like having to portion and being behind on plating. And the chef de cuisine, the guy who cooked for me at Per Se with my dad,
yeah,
came up to the station and said, "What would your dad say?" I was like,
"Yeah,
that type of abuse." Do you, yeah, know what I mean? Yeah. Where it's like there was no plates thrown, yeah, there was no like taking a hot pair of tongs and putting, yeah, it up, yeah, against, yeah, my tricep. None of that
just
stuff
mentally
happened.
Yeah.
But it was like I still think about that to this day. Where, yeah, it was like this, you know, like he knew what buttons to push.
Sure.
And it was this very mental. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, and a lot of chefs from that era pay attention to that stuff.
Yep.
And the thing is, like,
do you think about that today when you go to put something out?
Like, I wouldn't say from a, like, I want to prove this guy wrong, because in a lot of ways, like, he's made a lot of changes. Like, I follow this guy on Instagram.
Yep.
He sent me an email and saying, I see what you're doing with your program, and, like, I'm really proud of you.
That's fucking,
like,
awesome.
Like,
yeah.
Like awesome. I've come full circle on this whole, yeah, thing.
That's what my dad would say.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, to me, those have been a lot of the changes that I've seen. And there have been more positives, I would say, that come from working in those restaurants than negative for me. Yep. And I'm also the type of person who, like, I'm just persistent. You, yeah, know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to, like, oh, cool, somebody said something negative or you had a bad service. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I teach that
I
in my program
up
too. Yeah, I give up. And it's like your ability to bounce back from feedback is like, that speaks volumes to, yeah, your ability as a chef, because, like, you're going to have bad days.
Totally.
But it's like, that's not what it's about.
Travis, how do you, as an operator, how do you take care of your staff? How do you keep your people around?
I've just got to circle back real quick. Yeah. I've never done fine dining, guys,
yeah,
but hot tongs on triceps, this is a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got, you know, spoons full of, like, pasta water, that kind of thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it used to be gnarly.
It's used a lot in the kink world these days.
Is there, like, a chef-driven kink?
There should be.
Sid's
next dinner.
That is not the name of the podcast. But yeah,
a lot of blue towels.
So yeah, if, in case you didn't know, yeah, there's back in the day, people used to really abuse the shit out of kitchen workers, either mentally or physically. Sounds like you didn't know about this. It's a great way to save money. but yeah, do you you went through a quarantine. How do you retain your staff?
Well, it all starts with hiring.
Yep.
And I try to hire people that I know that I'm going to like and want to work with and are going to want to work with me. And I tend to hire people that actually, let me back up. I only interview the people, yeah. And then we do working interviews or stage shifts for everybody that comes through. And therefore, the staff then kind of makes the ultimate call on who's going to make it and who's going to not. We try to talk to as many people as possible and bring a bunch of people in. And then the staff's like, hey, you know, Jane Doe here, really, that's the person I want to hang out with every day. That's the person that took the initiative. And that's kind of been our methodology.
When you are hiring, are you seeing that? Are you still able to get like 10 or 12, you know, like options coming in?
Fully, yeah. Wow. I'm really lucky that way. On Poached, for example.
I feel like when you're there for like the amount of time,
it's a little more
reputable. People are like, most of them probably eating there too.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's not just like, hey, we're the new Smashburger place opening up. Trust us. Yeah, totally. How would you describe your food? You said it's breakfast driven. I've eaten there many times at many hours. I think I've probably eaten there at every hour, as you can imagine. But yeah, how would you describe the food there?
Well, we make everything in the building, and the only thing we don't make is maybe, you know, baked breads and ketchup and the sauces that might be on the table, Tapatio. But we make everything, every gravy, every sauce. Don't sleep on the specials on the weekends. Like, we really think about them. We try and put out food that we think the guests are going to like. We look to other restaurants a lot and try and see what they're doing and maybe, you know, borrow ideas.
We call that inspiration.
Inspiration. We get a lot of inspiration from places that are doing well on Instagram. And, you know, basically that's where we go. And also it's really important that, you know, you let the kids in back cook the food they want to cook. Yeah. And so 100%. I've got like a El Salvadorian kitchen, mm-hmm. mostly, strangely, nice. Women. And they all have like a sauce in their back pocket.
Yeah.
And they all have this idea of this thing they want to do next week. And I'm like, let's do it. That's amazing. Sounds great.
So like, what are some of the Salvadoran specials you've had on the menu?
We've tried flautas, which my girl Yancy really likes to do. She's got this avocado salsa that is one of the best bites I've ever had. Nice. I ask her to make it, and we put it on everything. We put it on this last weekend, for example, it was 420. So we leaned into that a little bit, and we did like a bunch of like quote unquote stoner food.
Nice.
And so we did like a nacho burger. Just a big pile of nachos on a burger, and I put that sauce on there. She does pupusas. We did a chili relleno. We did actually a chili relleno burrito a couple weeks ago, which was kind of hard to execute, but we went for it and tried it.
I think people sleep on chili rellenos, but I think it's one of my favorite.
That's my jam. I eat a chili relleno every week, if not twice a week.
Every week?
No shit.
Wow. No shit. I get one from Oaxaca down the street from Buckshot, and then a lot of times I get one from Los Cabos in North Bend, right by the outlet malls. You ask them for an authentic chili relleno.
Which, what's the difference?
It's actually like made to order, where the other one, I think, comes in a box.
Got it. And are yours always just cheese-filled, or do you have other things?
They're just cheese-filled.
Okay. So my first interaction with the relleno was I was running a food truck, and it was this old end, and I think their like mom would make them, and so what it was, they had their pepper stuffed with beef, and a little bit of cheese, I think. So it was the poblano beef cheese, and then fried, but then it was like cold because they would like just throw them in the fridge, and they'd just give it to you with a corn tortilla mayonnaise, and like a cold like fried poblano.
I'm not exactly sure how I feel about that.
That was my first interaction, and it was fucking like I would eat 30 of them,
and it was cold.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure, you know, I don't know. That's just how they did it.
Sure.
Have you had anything? Is it just cheese, or what's?
Yeah,
is
I mean, it's mostly cheese. Like the beef versions is the only other one that I'm familiar with. Yeah. Like, I don't know what else people are putting in their chili rellenos.
Yeah, I feel like I've never seen stuffed other than cheese on menus, and like, so I've been always chasing the beef thing, but yeah. Tell us more about the podcast you were doing.
Yeah, so that started as just basically like, I remember one of my line cooks, it was right after I was working on the west coast of Norway in the city called Bergen, it's sister city of Seattle, in a fine dining seafood restaurant. And Rene Redzepi had just done something cool. I can't remember if it was like Noma had just gone from 2 stars to 3 stars, or they had just, you know, moved up on the world's 50 best list, or something had happened. And I walked up to one of my line cooks, or I was standing at the pass one day, and I was just, you know, like, happened to just had seen the news, and I brought it up. And one of my line cooks, who went from an apprentice to chef de partie, he really worked his way up in the brigade with us. He was born and raised in Norway. And he's like, "Who's Rene Redzepi?" And I was like, "What? Like, you live in Scandinavia, and like, it's not even to say that you need to like have this guy be one of the people on your Mount Rushmore of chefs." Right. But it was like just the awareness of what's happening in the industry from a news perspective. I got so much value from that, from seeing, you know, kind of like how I don't know if you get, I think it was this story of like Jose Garces, who just like put this stack of purveyor bills on with his restaurant. He was like, I think it was 230 grand in the hole of like paying produce purveyors.
Yep.
And it's like, whether or not you want to like dunk on the guy, I think that there's like valuable lessons to learn from the things that are happening in the industry for like people who want to, you know, build impact and profit in the industry can like learn from and make sure that they don't make the same mistakes. So I was like, what if I started a new show where I would just break down, you know, like, not the eater, like what you should be making in your Negroni stories. It was like the actual stuff that people were reporting on from a news perspective. And so that's where the show started. And then similar
to
what you
guys... Can you give some examples?
Yeah. So like basically taking, you know, industry news. So like a perfect example is like the, a recent one is the Lummi Island scandal that happened with Blaine Wetzel. Or like this week I'm covering the David Chang chili crisp poll controversy that's going down.
What's your take on it?
Well, so I think people are vastly mischaracterizing how he came after people. He's not saying you have to stop making your product. He's saying you have to stop calling your product this name that I technically hold the trademark for. And I think that like, whether or not you want to, you know, like, I think the punchline of my take is like, he should have called it Momofuku Chili Crunch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he should have had his brand's name in the name.
Yeah. I think he should have created his own word. I mean,
yeah.
It would have cost him much less money than all these lawyers.
Totally.
Just get a group of people together and be like, all right, well, what are we going to call this? Let's just make it our own.
Yep. I basically put the Lago Ma Chili Crunch, Chili Crisp, and the Momofuku Chili Crunch ingredients up side by side. And they're nothing alike.
Right.
Like in and of itself, the Momofuku product is a different product. So my question to, you know, like my listeners was like, what should David Chang call this product? To your point, it was like, it should be called something different. Because in a lot of respects, yes, it looks and the use case is the same. But like there's mushroom powder and Mexican chilies in this product.
Yeah,
it's totally different. Like in a lot of cases, it's like a Noma, you know, like fermentation lab project more so than trying to, you know, compete in that space.
Have you ever, you know, so you're kind of giving people your takes on these new things. Have you ever had like really bad feedback on one of your takes, or have
kind of like an investigative reporting?
Yeah. sometimes it's more like just trying to, you know, like strip the bullshit down.
Yeah.
And like similar before the mics turned on, we were talking about like monetization and stuff. It's like, I don't go for clicks and drama and salaciousness. Right. I'm just more interested in like the next generation of chefs. It's like, they're more online than ever. And it's like to bury your head in the sand and just be like, well, you know, like I'm just going to figure it out. Or like, I know how to cook, therefore I should be able to open a restaurant. It's like, well, I think you can have a little bit more education and be more informed.
Right.
And it's like, if I can help somebody, I don't believe that any of us get our information from one person either these days.
Yeah.
Like I want to be one element or one facet of someone's information diet and be a little bit more productive and practical than, you know, other places. But from the you know, negative feedback place, I think there's a lot of people who, you know, like really hang on to the old guard way of doing things in a lot of respects. And thank goodness there's a lot of people who are kind of like shifting that. One of my most controversial ones is like, I think that people should call themselves a chef a lot sooner than people think that they should.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a lot of respects, I think people hold on to this, like, I'm just a cook mentality for too long. And they get to this place where like, similar to what I was talking about earlier, where you guys were agreeing, like you get thrust into a management position and it's like, hey, you're a sous chef now.
Yeah.
And if you're still in that role with that, I'm just a cook mindset, it's like, you're going to get asked to go talk to tables. You're going to get asked to change the menu. You're going to get asked in a finance meeting, like, hey, what happened with food costs last month?
Yeah.
And if you have this, I'm just a cook, you know, don't ask me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think if people were to step up into that role a little bit sooner, it's like the behavior changes that they're going to experience are much more beneficial for them in their career, much so than just like, take this back seat. I'm just a cook. Chef makes the recipes. I don't want to touch that.
Right.
It's like, I think almost every chef wants their, you know, team members to like own it a little bit more and like step into it. And it's like if we gatekeep the name, and it's like I find that to be more detrimental than others. And the other one that I came out with recently was I have kind of a vendetta with the word herd. In professional kickers, it's an industry meme. Like everybody says it all the time, whatever. And I find in a lot of cases it can do more harm than good. And the alternative that I propose is just a mirrored callback.
Yeah.
So if you were to say pick up five lamb, yep. I just want people to say pick up five lamb. It's like saying herd is like, what if Travis is talking to me and Sid just talked to me and I say herd.
Yeah.
Travis says, oh yeah, he heard me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But in reality, like, I didn't hear you. I was listening to Chef City. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so it's like, if I give the mirrored callback, then you're going to say like, hey, Justin, did you hear what I just said on the orange garnish? You know what I mean? And then that's going to be much more productive. And so it's little things like that where like, I just want teams to perform better. I think the experience is better at the restaurants that we go to. I think that people are much more likely to like stick around and have confidence in their work on their day-to-day versus this idea of just like, you know, oh, well, just figure it out. Like, I hear chefs say that all the time. Just figure it out. Just go faster. You know what I mean? I don't, like, there's no frameworks there.
Yeah.
And that's what frustrates me.
Tell us about the bear thing real quick.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the bear hits so many notes for me from the sense of the scene of Carmen in the fine dining restaurant where he's getting screamed at the pass.
Yeah.
In, I think it's season one, episode two. That's at my first job out of culinary school where the guy basically turned me down. I was, like, super persistent and got the job at this restaurant called Grace in Chicago.
Yeah.
They had a big shakeout with their investors, and the kitchen is still the same place that it was. And so they filmed episode two in that kitchen thinking that it was the French Laundry, but it's really the old Grace kitchen. So like that was my first job out of culinary school. When I, went to Copenhagen to stage at NOMA, I stayed on a boat just like Marcus did in episode whatever it was in season two. So many, kind of like similarities with that show, and just being able to like, it was my first foray on the YouTube front into doing Reacts style content. So I have somebody else's content on the screen and I'm pausing at certain moments and being like, there's a funny moment in season one where like Marcus has a 22 quart Cambro of baking powder.
Yeah.
And there's like a little line of baking powder left.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, in a fine dining kitchen, that would be consolidated in like a hot second. Because it's like everybody, that's going to bug chefs. They're going to look at that 22 Cambro and be like, what's going on here? Or like explaining why people cut the tape. You know what I mean? And from a views perspective, like that really expanded my audience. It really kind of like new people on the channel, new faces, new perspectives. And so that's been really cool.
There is a lot of, I don't know if you're familiar. I just did a pop up based on the show and
Dreamland, right?
Yeah. Fucking awesome. I think it was our best one to date.
That's
for
cool.
sure. We did like a secret dining room and sick. The whole thing and it was a lot of fun. But I had to rewatch it, just for inspiration, probably like 10 or 12 times in the last like
accuracy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's really important. Like that's so important to me to not get like called out on like one of the first things we did. We did that. Commercial, and I didn't know this, but Denali's colorblind. And so, like, if you look at the picture, it's like three of us have like a very light blue apron, and he has like a darker blue apron. And I post that picture on Reddit, and like that was one of the things people fucking flipped out. But like, they can't even get matching aprons. Like, so yeah, so like details are so important, and it was a learning lesson. But yeah, there are things that I was like screaming at where I'm like, why isn't there seconds on the clock when it says every second matters?
Right.
Are you a Bear fan? Have you seen the show?
Sure, yeah.
So I don't know. What are some of the other things that like are like that? I don't know. Like we've talked about this before. I feel like it's a TV show. It's like, when they got to romanticize a lot of the stuff. So I'm like, no one becomes a Michelin style chef in like, in a month. But it'd be boring to watch three seasons of growth,
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you have to give a lot of credit to like the culinary producers on that show. I mean, just like Courtney Storer, Maddie Matheson being involved in the capacity that he was and, just their connections to the industry. I mean, Jeremy Allen White trained in Dave Barron's kitchen in Santa Monica and Postulate to prepare for being Carmi in the role. And, when they really went to Copenhagen, like they didn't like, put Marcus in front of a green screen. Like they genuinely went to spend time in some of these places and, just make sure that it was like as accurate as possible. And they're moving super fast. Season three is like 2 months away, I think.
And I think they're filming three and four.
Yeah, it's shockingly fast how fast they're moving. And I think the success that they've had, like bringing in the Kasama guys in Chicago, like Jeannie Kwan and Tim, they're doing it in a way where I think a lot of us industry folks would want to see a show portrayed after, you know, shows like Burnt coming, movies like Burnt coming out, where it's just like all of us roll our eyes looking at the way that, you know, that's portrayed
did
on screen.
Did you ever watch the Bradley Cooper show, Kitchen Confidential?
The Bradley Cooper one, no.
So that is a show that no one saw.
Uh-huh.
But based on the book, I think you can get the DVD on like eBay. It's like 12 episodes. And
the DVD on eBay.
Like I don't know why it's not more popular, but like I feel like that show hit the nail on the head for cooking way more than The Bear did. And I think I haven't thought about it in 10 years until you just brought that up. Travis, I want to talk about like all the other events that you do at like the Shanghai Room, because you have comedy and karaoke. Our previous guest, like Dino, he does shows there. How do you get the community involved and like what kind of different things you like to do there?
We leaned into events because a lot of people don't just want to go out and get hammered at a bar anymore.
Yep.
It turns out.
I can relate with that.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Especially younger people, more and more they want to have an experience when they're spending money.
Yep.
And so you have to find those experiences. And, you know, I would have loved to have been ahead of things like drag. Unfortunately, we're a little outside of the city in Greenwood. We're not as central as we could be. And so as luck has it, you know, some of my regulars, Dino, comedy, Dino Daddy, came through. And he's like, hey, you know, you got this space. Let me try this thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you should try it. Same but different, a young lady came through, Rocky, and she's like, hey, I really want to have a ping pong league.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, go for it. And so that's on Thursday nights.
How do you do that? You just move the tables? Or
just move the tables, put up two ping pong, and she does. Yeah, she brings in a big popcorn machine, and she gets a DJ in there, and they have these ping pong tournaments. She's had like some like nationally recognized ping pong stars come through, and do that. It looks really cool from the outside, like when people are walking by.
What the fuck is going on?
It gives you like a
really
cool. It's almost like windows at Macy's. You know what I mean? You're like, oh wow, that looks cool. I want to buy that. So that's interesting. And then we've always done karaoke.
Yeah.
That's kind of like our tried and true thing.
What nights do you do karaoke?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And my bar manager's gone this week, so I've been closing the bar.
Okay.
And been there for karaoke and comedy.
Nice.
But the karaoke, another thing about the younger generation, they are really like talented people. I mean, it's all 90s all the time, and everybody's like a great singer all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's so,
karaoke.
It's so funny how this generation is like really down with the pretty much like 80s to 90s.
Fully.
Yeah, yeah.
I also think it's like kind of a callback to being online so often that like their references are right on and they've just come up always seeing these things. They know how to sing because they like watch other people sing and they know how to like hold their face. And I don't know, they just know how to be on camera and they know how to be in front of people. And it really shows in something as simple as karaoke.
They're killing it.
It's like watching a concert sometimes with like these people. I'm like, this is incredible.
Awesome.
When we first opened like 10 years ago, people were not.
Yeah.
It wasn't like
it's
that
more,
at all.
It was more alcohol fuel.
It was a train wreck. And that's I love that part of it. Like give me a train wreck anytime.
You karaoke, know? Sid?
I do. I mean, in my drinking days, I thought I could, but
not sober.
Yeah, not sober.
Dude, we
not
should
not.
Do a sober karaoke night.
I don't want
at
to.
At the Shanghai Room.
Yeah, 100% host that. That's actually a really good idea for a party, you guys. Thank
just
you.
Host,
yeah, right.
Yeah, sober karaoke. Yeah, that's actually a great idea with some mocktails.
Hell yeah!
I think you're onto something. Yeah. That's really good. Thank you for that.
No, I'll do that.
At Last Call, they do karaoke. I think I know they do it on Fridays. So sometimes when I get back and I'm like doing dishes and stuff in the other room, I can hear the karaoke, and sometimes it's the train wreck, and sometimes it's really good, but yeah.
Have you ever heard Josh karaoke?
No, but
the voice
talk
of
about,
a fucking angel.
That's what I hear. Maybe come hang out at Last Call. We'll do some karaoke.
Can I ask a question about what we were talking about earlier, though, with Justin? When we're talking about like online, because you know it is really hard. It's two callbacks actually. Like so, you're asking about hiring. And, you know, as an operator, I'm not a chef. It's hard to, like, find people. And, like, for me to know exactly what their skill set is or, like, where they're at in the kitchen, what their progression's like. I'm wondering what you guys think about people and an online education. So many people come in and, like, they've got experience from, say, Taco Time. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, maybe a Denny's. Incredible. Great for me specifically. Yep. But what if this person came in and they had only done like just watched a bunch of videos, Instagram, TikTok, for example. You think that somebody could come to speed doing something like that?
100%. And like, you know, as someone with
you know, three kids, I would like to believe like that's where education's heading, where it's like, you know, you don't need to go into a building. You don't, you know, you can, I've learned dishes off that. I think it really comes down to attitude. You know, when you say the Denny's thing, like for me, 1000%, I'd rather have someone that's worked at Denny's than has worked at a Michelin star restaurant for me. Cause like, I like the stuff you learn at Denny's. I worked at Buffalo Wild Wings for a long time, and I learned how to clean a fucking kitchen that way, you know? I take that back. I would like some permission to a restaurant. But, you know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you get the culinary school attitude. So it would come down to, like, what's the attitude? It's like, well, actually, I know this because I saw this on Instagram. Or it's like, hey, like, I you know, I know some shit because I watched this, but I'm willing to learn. I think that'd be my attitude. Like, I totally think you can learn a lot off.
I have a kid right now who... I hired him when he was 17, and I had been blowing through cooks who all had experience, so they said, but they couldn't learn, and because it's sometimes they just, the people they work for before get in their heads, and I'm like, all right, well, this is a different restaurant, and I'm a different person, and this is how things need to be here, and this kid has excelled so much. And he just turned 18, and I bought him his first.
I saw that. Nice.
His first Woo stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, told him, like, hey, man, you're absolutely killing it. And even Taps, who has a ton of experience and is a great chef, he's like, dude, this kid Jake is a monster.
Real quick, you said you hired him when he was 17. Did he have any experience for that? Or is this his first kitchen job?
Yeah. And he is a solid cook.
Sponge.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really cool. And he, yeah, exactly. He, you know, he had a hard time wrapping his head around it, and then one day I was like, something clicked, and I was like, what clicked? He's like, I just figured out that I need to do everything the way you tell me to do it, and exactly how you tell me to do it, and my life's super easy.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, right on, man. That's cool. Great. Yeah. I'm not you know, I'm telling you things to make your life easier and your job more efficient, and you know, so yeah, I mean, I think it goes both ways. And I kind of had a question about this, the teaching part, because in my experience at Dahlia, we had a lot of culinary school graduates come through.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of them just took nosedives on the pressure point.
Yeah.
When you're in that moment online and all stations are firing at full speed and the chef's screaming everything out and, you know, somebody runs past you crying and, you know, you're just like,
what? And they've never picked up more than 12 plates at a time.
Right.
And you're like, whoa.
And that's not that pressure point is something you,
yeah, no,
that you can't teach.
Yep.
And so like, how do you prepare somebody for that?
I tell my students directly that if you take the program and you don't end up putting it out into the real world, it's like that ends up being a little, you're doing yourself a disservice if you do that. I was so glad, Travis, to hear that you still do working stages, because I'm a proponent of this too, that I think anybody who's telling you that their program is going to, whether it's masterclass or whether it's ICE or whether whatever, is going to like churn out a like high performing cook just from the series of videos or the series of lectures. It's a little bit like, how many videos on push-ups do I have to watch before I have a big chest?
Yeah.
It's like, that's not how it works. Yeah. That's not how it works. You know what I mean? And so that's why
there's the name of the podcast.
I mean, that's how I like to think about keeping my program short. And it's like, students of my program have lifetime access to it. So the whole gist of it is, you watch the program, you go out in the real world and put it into practice, you get your station score back, you see where you're struggling, you rewatch the modules that you're struggling with, you get the frameworks internalized, you build the habits, you change your behaviors, and then it's like, it's this cycle, more so than how I see a lot of culinary schools work, where it's like, you're going to make this pilgrimage to this place, you're going to get all this content and ingest it, and then it's like, never, I don't have a relationship with CIA anymore. Yeah. They're like, don't talk to me.
We
cash your check, like see ya, like good luck. And it's like, I provide career support to people that come through my program, where it's like, I want to help you with your cover letter.
Right.
I want to help you make your list of restaurants that you're excited about. I want to make sure that when you go into that stage, you know what to expect, like on a working trail.
That's really unfortunate, because I went to AI, and I get a, they contact me all the time to be like, hey, you want to give us more money?
Yeah, man, you're late on your payment.
Here's what I'm going to say about AI and culinary school in general. I went late in life because I was in a completely different industry, and I was really hungry as my own money. I did a one-year course, and in each class, I excelled because I wanted to learn, and I was so hungry for it. And then there's people that, like, you know, there's like, because you don't actually cook for like the first, you know, 8 weeks or whatever, just like I forgot what they call it, like, you know, just a...
It's like book knowledge.
Aqua
yeah,
chef.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, book knowledge and, yeah, whatever. And I just remember people, like, dropping out before that, being like, oh, I want to fucking cook. And so, I ironically, you know, teachers saw that, and, like, I took every class I could, like, after class shit. I was working two jobs and staging at a Michelin star restaurant and going to culinary school, and it worked for me because I fucking got everything I could out of it. And the other 23 people, like, I'm still friends with some of them on Facebook and or Instagram and shit, and, like, yeah. So, you know, a lot of them people don't do shit, and I think there's a lot of room to talk shit, but it's like, you kind of have to get it yourself. Yes, AI wants a check, and, like, CIA wants a check, and that's how business
I
works.
I want a check.
Yeah, we all want a check.
And we're handing out checks.
But,
no checks on the podcast.
I think it is, you get what you put in. And do you ever, let me ask you a question. Do you have people that want to take your class that you say, no, I don't think.
You don't, like, got what it
yeah,
takes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, so, I mean, the program's called Total Station Nomination, yeah. And it's specialized on running a station in a kitchen.
Yeah.
If you want to be a private chef, it's like, it's a little bit like if you go to a CrossFit gym, it's like, will you learn stuff that's going to translate to tennis or the ice rink, right, or whatever? It's like, yeah, you probably will. But this is a CrossFit class.
Yeah.
It's like if you want to get, you know, ice skating stuff, go to an ice skating center.
Right.
And it's like, I've had people who are like, I want to go the private chef route. And it's like, maybe this program isn't going to be exactly the right fit for you. But it's like, to what you, I think you said it kind of in passing, but it's like, I'd rather have somebody from a Michelin kitchen who's worked a station there, yep, you know, apply for this job.
Yep.
And it's like, having spent enough time in this industry, like, that is a little bit of the peak of, you know, like, kitchen performance is, like, people who've worked in catering companies, people who've worked in all sorts of kitchen environments. And it's like, if you can hold down a station in a fine dining environment, it's kind of like you can translate that to so many other environments in a way that other kitchen experience doesn't always translate.
So sorry if you said it. I think I asked this on a tangent.
Sure.
So I'll give you an example. Like, I think I talked about this before, like, in culinary school one time where it's like there's no fats anywhere, no oil, whatever.
Interesting.
But there's only cream.
Yeah.
And so like you had to, like, whip it to make butter.
Yeah, and then
and that was, like, an example of, like, you know, figure it out.
Yep.
What are some figure it out kind of things that you do in your class to...
Totally. I think so much of it, I teach so much pre-planning in a way that I've never seen, you know, people talk about, like, writing your prep list, yeah, and really kind of, like, sitting down and saying, what's the plan of action that I'm going to take in the first, you know, let's call it 30 minutes of my day? And it's like, is there a world where I can, you know, take a look at, I use the example of reducing beet juice as an example of a project that I see line cooks do all the time. So it's like, I need to reduce this beet juice, and I use it as, like, an extreme example, but it's like, so many people have these projects throughout their day where it could be an automated project. You could have this be going passively in the background, but for whatever reason, people think, like, I have to stand there and watch this thing. And you can reduce beet juice super fast. If you crank it on high heat, you're standing over it with a whisk in a super wide pot, it's going to reduce super fast. But it's like, is there a world where you can kind of, like, take a step back and say, I can put this in a maybe a taller pot. I can put it on, like, 4 on the heat, and it's like, it's going to go and reduce where I can do something else.
Yep.
But any of these moments where it's like, you might have to, like, I hesitate to teach it in this way where it's like, oh, well, you gotta, you know, like, find the cream and you gotta, like, whip the butter and all that stuff. I'm much more in the camp of, like,
multitasking
and like the willingness to speak up and say that you're uncomfortable, mm-hmm, or that you don't know something. Or that, like, so many people have too hard of a head on themselves, and they're like, I'm going to look like an idiot. My chef's going to yell at me. And in the reality is, like, any of us who have experience running kitchens, it's like, we'd so much rather, with 4 hours before service, hear that there's a problem rather than that line cook buries it. And I'm going to be the one to see it.
Yeah.
I'm going to see, look, your rail's not set up.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's going on here? Oh, well, chef, the tarragon didn't come in, so I didn't make the tarragon oil.
Right.
And it's like, when did you know the tarragon didn't come in? It's like, oh, well, at 11 when the produce got dropped off. And it's like, you didn't say anything? Why? And it's like, oh, well, you know, I had some in the freezer and I was going to thaw it out. And it's like, the excuses start to stack and the anxiety starts to stack. And it's like, people see those blow-ups and then that creates a negative feedback cycle because they're like, oh, well, chef blew up at me last time I brought something up. And it's like, well, if you can have a little bit, I teach level setting. Basically, level setting is the thing where, like, you and I have a mutual understanding of what's going to happen. And it's like, if something's going to move forward at this time with this quantity at this quality standard, and it's like, if you don't feel like you have that level setting with the person who delegated you the thing, that should be a signal for you as the line cook to speak up and be like, hey, I don't feel like we're aligned. I don't feel like I understand what you're saying. I don't feel like I can repeat back to you what it is that you instructed me to do. And it's like, just teaching that, just awareness of, like, okay, you need to say something. It's like, how many problems would that solve more so than just like, well, you need to learn how to brunoise a little bit faster. You know what I mean? Like that would solve more problems in professional kitchens to me.
For sure.
Gotta be intimate with your mise en place.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Before we talk about places we like to eat and where we eat this week, I got a question for each of you. I want to talk about Arc.
Yeah.
One of my favorite places ever.
Yeah,
on this
cool.
podcast, we talk about, you know, good things and bad things and closings and, you know, what was Arc and what happened?
I really wanted to do something new, you know, after 9 years. I know I've heard you both talk about it, but, and I'm sure you feel the same way. Sometimes things become a grind.
Yeah.
And I love my grind. Don't get me wrong. Yep. But I think that you can be a lot more productive if you have a little creativity in your life. 100%. I digress. I'm buddies with the people on the Finney Neighborhood Association, and you go to those meetings sometimes and just check in with the neighborhood. And I kept saying, like, hey, you guys, like, and this is like 2021, 22. It used to be called the Park Pub, and I had a lot of memories there. It's a beautiful space, the Arc space. Big windows, yep. Old building, yada, yada. What's going on with the Park Pub? What's going on with the Park Pub? Nobody knew. One day I get a blind call. Chris Mycutt, who runs the Finney Neighborhood Association, says, hey, I found the owner. I'm going to give him your number. And he cold called me. I was just out to eat. And he's like, hey, I heard you're interested in my place.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. I had spoken with Todd, my partner there, about opening a place. Todd and I had worked together a couple times at Ray's Boathouse. We worked there together for about 5 years. He had done some shifts at Shanghai. We had a good working relationship. He's a teacher. By trade, he had some free time, some free money, and I was like, "Well,
also one of the bartenders for 36 courses."
Isn't he great?
Yeah, he's amazing.
I said, "Hey, let's give this a try," and we did. And that's how I met Damon. Damon came in; he was really a big part of the success there, the food, the culinary program. Ultimately, we didn't really find our footing in the neighborhood. Location, location, location. I'm sure you guys have heard that before.
Yep.
And then also the landlords weren't, you know, exactly. The brick and mortar kids, if there's a takeaway from me, it's interview your landlord.
Yeah.
And trust me, you can get yourself a little contract lawyer and make sure.
I mean, if you don't mind talking about, like, what was the issues with the landlord?
Mixed messaging at first. There was some ideas that the lease would be like short term and it would just be renewed automatically and it like would not be like there wouldn't be any increases incrementally. And the kids had kind of implied that like they were waiting to like kind of inherit the building and then sell off. And so that's kind of what we thought. We thought that we were going to be on this like kind of 3-year timeline. Yeah. We were just going to have this like great rent. Because it was just really affordable.
Yep.
And what happened was as we went like maybe 3 months out from the renewal, they jacked the price. Yep. They hadn't really been super available to us. We just didn't have a great relationship with them.
Out of curiosity, like what kind of percentage jump up were they doing where it wasn't worth it?
It was almost like 20%, you know, year over year, which was a lot, especially in our first year.
Yeah.
The thing that really got us, though, is that when we went in, the HVAC system and the walk-in cooler both needed to be, like, replaced in a way. And those two costs, and I know you guys all know this, but, like, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars. And, you know, when you take tens of thousands of dollars out of a small
before you
business
even open,
like that, before... You know, before you get through year one, it's really detrimental, and we couldn't recoup any of those costs from the landlord. So the relationship was a little weird. And then look, somebody came through and he's like, "Hey, you should sell this place. It's gorgeous," and we listed it. Nobody ever like we had no bites until the very last month when we're about to ink to paper, and it sold. Yep. And then we like took our money and ran.
It's one of those things. You know, we had Johnny from Small Seeds Deli, where it's like. One of my favorite places, but couldn't operate because just the food costs and stuff like that. And Arc was one of those things where finally someone gave Damon the keys, and like that's just what needs to happen. He's the best chef in Seattle. I say it all the time, and I loved eating there because he put together such a perfect, just a well-rounded menu. And the cocktails, the NAs were great. And like it was very Instagrammable and fucking beautiful. And it was sad to go, but it was one of my favorite places to go.
Thanks. That's nice to hear. Look, I think if it had been in Fremont, we'd still be there.
Totally.
I think if we were in Lower Queen Anne, we'd still be there. I think we just missed a little bit on like what that neighborhood
was. Have you been
to
the Thai place that's there now?
I haven't. Have you driven by? They they like they're in Thailand or something. There's been a sign on the door for like three months. Yeah, it's, family emergency.
And oh, okay.
Yeah, they've been gone for like 3 months, and so the space is just sitting there.
That's you know, there's a lot of great stuff on that street. I really do like it. What was my question for you, Justin? I forgot what it was. All right, let's just talk about what we're
Let's talk restaurants.
Yeah. You're in Greenwood. There's so much fun stuff there. Or just what are some of your spots?
I mean, you got to check out Dark Room if you haven't been. I know a lot of people are talking about it, but beyond like the great cocktails, there's also some really great food there. I go there a lot. Gainsburg. Have you guys been to Gainsburg?
I love Gainsburg.
You know, Steve has had that place since I even remember going to Greenwood. You know, there used to be a McDonald's in Greenwood. Yeah, it's where the bank is now. But I mean, that's how long Gainsburg's been there, like since that McDonald's.
And it still
feels
like a hidden like gem, you know, 100. Like
100%. And it's all locals. They have like original hires there. They have people that have been there for like 20 years. Totally. So that's pretty cool. But I'm a little more basic than that, honestly. When I go out to eat, I go to Spud's on Green Lake a lot. Yep. My buddy owns that. I go to Kate's Pub a lot. You'll find me at Union Saloon because it's right by my house. You guys know Union Saloon on Stone at all? Mm-hmm. It's on Wallingford. Lady named Michelle owns it, and she's always there every time you go. You know, she's an owner operator, and she's constantly there. And I just love that about that place. The food's great. We go to that Olympia Pizza too on 45. Yeah. You know that place. Yeah. So those are kind of some of the places I eat. Nice. I do like a drink, so like I like you know a little drink, a little food, a little mixy match.
I lived in Georgetown for 20 years, so I never really. A lot of the places up here north of Seattle, I'm still like discovering.
Yeah, we got a. I feel like I want to start a club with people like me. Like, I know Ballard very well. You know Georgetown. Yeah, like, and we should go, hey, come to my neighborhood. I'm going to take you around to the five best places or whatever.
Yeah, well, once I get all moved in and everything, I want to start having lunch after the podcast again with you and Chris and Noah and everybody.
Mondays
and
are a great
guests
day.
And, yeah, yeah.
That's one thing I want to say before we I put in my plug spot. Start sending me recommendations. I feel like Thursdays and Mondays and Sundays are my like going out days, and like when I get there, I go fuck, and then I just go to the same place. So like, please send me your recs. All right, Dave, where'd you eat this week?
I ate a Buckshot Honey, man. I was lucky enough to be included. The guys from Lady J are doing a May is Barbecue Month, and they're doing a little film. Reputable Pacific Northwest barbecue places, and they included me, so they came out and we did.
Did you say reputable?
Yeah.
And they interviewed you.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. They came out and I served them some food, and then we went upstairs and did their podcast for a little while.
Oh, cool.
And it was super fun. Burke and his lovely wife from Hanbi came out, and they ate like an hour after they left.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a social.
That's got to make you feel so good that like it's such a destination spot and so many cool people go there.
I know, man. Like I see so many chefs that I respect on just so many levels, and just, I mean, owners, chefs, whatever. Like I'm just so happy when I see him walk through the door and be like, thinking about me, and they took 30 minutes out
like
of their life.
Comes and sees me at the Fremont Market. We're like, I was gonna get some shit anyway, and hey, what's up? Like, no, you're coming.
I was buying some honey and saw your ass over here, so I thought I'd say hi.
That's awesome.
But yeah, man, it was a good week. But no, man, I really haven't eaten anywhere.
You probably know Burke, and you haven't been to Hamdi?
No. Oh, Hamdi. Okay, yeah. Single thread days.
Did you work with him at single
thread? No, but my old roommate did.
Wild. So. Have you been there?
To Hamdi? Yeah.
Fucking.
But Noah Larson and his beautiful wife came out too. It's just super special.
Oh, cool. Fuck yeah. I'm sure you like to eat out. Spots?
I mean, is it sacrilege to do one quick non-Seattle place?
Absolutely not.
Neither of us own a Seattle restaurant. It's called the Seattle Restaurant Podcast. So.
Well, I had to reschedule this with you guys because I got called to San Francisco.
That's what my question was.
I got called to San Francisco to do a 13-course, 500-person event with my old chef from Norway.
No shit.
Yeah, for the Crown Prince of Norway, flew to San Francisco and did a big Norwegian-California business event. And you know, it was 10 days out. He called me. He's like, "Hey, I need hands."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Yeah, let me come help, but I gotta text Sid and like, reschedule this podcast. I'm so sorry."
That is one I'll allow. That one makes sense. Yeah. That's so cool.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Was fun.
What was the menu like?
I mean, we flew in over 1,000 pounds of Norwegian seafood, and we had to process like a bunch of crab and live langoustines, like caught the morning of, flown in the
How
same
big
day.
Is the team?
I think the prep team was like 6 of us, and then day of it was like 11.
Old people kind of flown in from different places.
Some mostly local places, because he's opening a restaurant in the ferry building, and got so it. He's like, you know, he got his Michelin star in Norway, and so he's really just half American, so he's trying to, you know, branch out and, you know, lean into. He already has a restaurant in Texas, but he's, you know, doing a bunch of other concepts. Anyway, so this restaurant that one of the guys that I brought in, old coworker of his, his name's Nico, owns a restaurant called Maison Nico. It's like a bakery, but they also do lunch.
Okay.
And dude, his like pativier, his pâté en croûte, his croissant work, his like all of the laminated dough stuff that he does, even the branding, it's so good in San Francisco. So anybody who's in SF, go to Maison Nico. I don't need to give them any more, you know, like hype, because they're so, you know, trendy and like always a line out the door. But Maison Nico was like definitely a highlight over this past week.
Maison Nico, cool. That's not a reservation place.
No. Just walk up.
I was gonna ask you.
Probably have to stand in line.
We
didn't have time to go out to like proper dinners, and so me and the other guy that I was working with, we would venture out in the mornings.
Yeah.
To like go get stuff, because we knew we had to be at like 10 a.m. prep time. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna be cooking for System of a Down this summer.
Oh, cool.
In San Francisco, and I'm going to go there early.
Yeah.
Last time I did California's.
Yeah, California's is sick.
Do you have any other Michelin recs?
Yeah, the other place that I really wanted to go, Corey Lee just opened a new, I think it's a Korean barbecue concept called San Ho Wan that I really, really want to try. And then this other place called K-Fico, C-H-E, and then the second word is F-I-C-O. That was also really, really high on my list. And then Octavia, and then we went and ate at Angler. That was the one dinner that we did get a chance to eat at, and that just like... From the aesthetics of the kitchen to the service to the wine list, it's like it's just all really, really phenomenal. So back to Seattle, I ate at L'Orsan last night.
Yeah,
friend's birthday party. It was just the four of us, and you know, like Chef JJ and I used to do dinners at this farm out in the field. Mm-hmm. This was like 5 or 6 years ago, and so to see him still firing on all cylinders, the menu was awesome. Like every single dish was just like they coursed it out perfectly. Like had some really nice bottles of wine, and it was just a fun dinner. To have a place that is just like humbly serving great, like. They have this chicken morel dish right now that's just like, it's so
solid.
Simple. Like, it's just chicken and morels and sauce. Yep. And it's like, to serve that on a plate, it's like, you're not hiding behind anything. I love that type of food. So that was really, really phenomenal. And then the other place that I went, we had a family friend in town this weekend, and we went to Saint Bread up in by UW.
Yep.
And they're, just to see how they're building that brand. Yeah. Like, they have a new concept called Heave Ho, which is going to be like a, you know, on the water, I think they're doing dinner concept.
Oh, I don't know anything
brand,
about this.
They just had signs up. Cool. Just as we were standing in line, I was like looking at it, and
Heave
they're like,
Ho.
Heave Ho. It's
what
this
a
new
cool
concept
name.
That's, you know, launching. And so to see them building that brand and, you know, just even the little things, like I posted them on my story. I'm at St. Bread. I'm so sorry. It took me over a year to get to this place. And they responded. They're like, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
You know, and in a world of just like really engaging with people who are willing to show you love on social, it's like that is like all green flags in my mind. So totally. It was really, really good.
Real quick, try to deviate, but are you still doing pop-ups in Seattle?
Yes,
cooking?
And no.
If
not,
I want to try your food, how do
not,
I try
not
your food?
Really. I mean, like, my kid was born in July of last year, and I did my last pop-up of, you know, like before he was born in April, and then I got, you know, I did one more just slid it right in July. Literally, service had ended, and an hour and a half after service ended, my wife texted me and was like, it's happening. So he came 10 days early.
Wow.
And so that's why I felt doing that last event. And, you know, I was like working right up until.
So you're going to pause on pop-ups for now.
Yeah, pause on pop-ups, focus on teaching, and then really just kind of like the goal with my whole program is like I want to basically build the, you know, bones and operational infrastructure of like launching restaurants.
Yeah.
So like I want to be able to like really take care of my team when I do, you know, launch concepts and, you know, make sure that, you know, even if you, you know, didn't go to school, it's like I want my program to be something that like that's an employee benefit that I'm able to offer to the restaurants that I want to launch.
If we end up doing a bear pop-up based on season 3 and 4, are you going to come hang out?
I'm so down.
All right.
I'll commentate. I'll cook. I'll shoot content.
Live commentary about how much we're fucking up would be great.
You can see them going down over here.
there was a time, there was two things. One, like I talked about a couple times, like I would just
insanely sick, and I did a crazy shift the day before. Then I did a 6 a.m. to like 4 p.m. shift at Fremont Market. Then did this, and I felt like I was locked in the walk-in. Like, wow. And I just had to trust my team to do the shit that we've been talking about for 3 months, right? And they all killed it. But there was a time where we did not have enough eggs for the omelet. And
shucks.
In the middle of the service, I just see Chef Damon fucking whipping up eggs. I'm like, wow. How long on omelets?
That's funny.
But and it was fine because we went out and told people what happened. Yep. And like everyone was cool with it. And it was awesome. All right, let's see. Where did I eat this week? Former guest, Chef Chester from Gracia, took the daughter out there before seeing Godzilla, which was really fun. Let's see. A lot of food trucks this week. Chicken Fix, old favorite. Got some lumpias and chicken and fries from them. New one for me, Puffle Up. They do the Korean cheese dogs. Have you seen these things? They're like a little bit of hot dog. Like it's like a big mozzarella stick, but like Korean flavors.
Sounds right up my alley.
It was I keep on saying there's another place called Corn Dog in Capitol Hill that I always drive by. But I'm gonna be honest, I was like, I don't need to do that. It's just Instagram bullshit. It's fucking delicious.
What happened to Orange Julius?
What the fuck are you talking about? I'm not gonna call the podcast What Happened to Orange Julius.
Corn dogs remind me of the little bouncers. Do you remember that?
I gotta stop smoking weed in here because you come in here and you get contact high and go on about Orange Julius. Let's see. I don't know. Pretty light week, lots of work. All right, let's talk about some fucking plugs. Travis, talk to us. When should we come and see you? When's the fun stuff happening?
Well, you know, the North Star Diner has 2 happy hours every day, and I just want to say that we really are community driven and we try to get new people in the building. But what's really important is people wanting to come back again. Like that's what we're always talking about is like making that connection, making sure that, you know, I know who you are, maybe what you eat, and like I'm accessible to you and I keep your coffee full, yada, yada. So
it is like a real diner feel. You know, I feel like some of the diners in Seattle have a hey, let's open up a diner kind of feel, but like this is like, you know, I love going
people
to there. You're just normal ass
breakfast.
People. Yeah.
That's
some good ass breakfast.
There.
What you didn't even say? What when
two
are the happy hours?
A morning happy hour. So I got 10 things under $10. You know, so it's the same price as Boom. McDonald's.
Yeah,
it's like come through. You know,
and it's half the price.
What time is this?
8 a.m. to 10 a.m.
And
I don't know anybody else doing a morning happy hour. So that's
8 a.m. to 10 a.m. What are some items you can get for under $10?
Breakfast burrito. Our breakfast, you know, combo. We call it the Little Dipper, but it's just like it's a plate. You know, it's eggs, hash browns, meat, toast, that sort of thing. There's a breakfast sandwich. There's huevos rancheros, which
I've had
bang.
Many
it's
times.
A little spicy if you're into that kind of thing. There's a few options. And in the afternoon, we do a second happy hour. On Fridays, we do that $5 burger. We do something Boom. Called a drive-through burger. It's like a little, it's like a play on like a smash burger, not quite, but almost. And with a big bag of fries, $5, man.
With
every
fries.
Friday, every Friday, come through, $5.
How many are you allowed to have?
One more time. Hey, here's a little thing. Here's like secret menu stuff about North Star. If you order a drive-through, we'll keep them coming for $5. So you like, if you order one, you can have 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever you want, $5 more every time.
All right.
Like, so we try to like keep it so people can come through and spend some money because I need to see you more than once a week in order for me to keep those doors open. You know.
You know I said this many times. Like, I don't think any restaurant in Seattle is charging enough. And you know, I think prices should be much higher than they are. However, you know, me, Dante, and Greg from Street Seria, we go out to breakfast once a week, and sometimes it's like, God damn, that's $30. Like, you know, and you know, sometimes I just want a simple like get in and get out, and that's fucking perfect. Like, $10, that's an amazing deal, and that's awesome you're able to do that. Dave, what's happening? What else is Shanghai Room. Any special, any fun things?
Well, you know, on Wednesdays we do trivia in there, which is kind of new. Thursdays, I just mentioned we did that ping pong. There's always like a live music thing on Thursdays too. Shorty, you guys know Shorty who books here in Seattle? He does all the booking there on Thursdays, which is pretty cool. And then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we do the open mic comedy, and it goes straight into karaoke.
Love that. I love that switch when that happens.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's cool.
I'll say real quick, you know, Dino's a homie, and I went to one of the Shroom Room events.
Yeah.
And
they sell out.
So here's the funny thing is, I kind of went, at, like, I was kind of tired. I think it was maybe a Sunday, or and I was just really tired, but I was like, hey, let's go support the homie, like, I don't know if a lot of people are going to be there, but, you know, I just want to support local comedy. And that was my ad to going there. And then get there, I'm like, I can't even fit in here. It's fucking, and, like, I love comedy. I go to a lot of comedy in Seattle, and I have a lot of problems with half the venues. But seeing comedy at the Shanghai Room is such a it reminds me of seeing comedy back in the day in St. Louis at just, like, smaller clubs. It's such a fun feeling. Like, you don't, you know, even when they do crowd work, it's not like you're being attacked or anything. It's just a very great community feeling. I love seeing comedy at the Shanghai Room, and I highly recommend it if you can. Dave.
What's up? So, as I mentioned, Noah Larson from Larson Made Knives.
Mm-hmm. A.K.A. Mikey Way from My Chemical Romance.
Came by this weekend. And so we are really looking at July 27th as the Buckshot Honey Hoedown. We got some things to iron out before we actually, like, put out posters and announcements. And I'm meeting with Mark Roman from Roman and the Whereabouts, the band that played last year. We're going to have some dinner on Tuesday. So I'm really hoping to be able to announce this event. It's also going to be like a Knife Skills Olympics, and cool. There's going to be some prizes. I'm hoping to
get Justin to come.
What are you doing?
Well, that's what we need to talk about. Then we'll put out an announcement for people. We'll definitely include you in that make sure that everybody knows about it. That way, when there is a sign up for the Knife Skills Olympics, you can hop in there. We got to figure out the paperwork. So if you cut off your fucking fingers,
it sounds like it should be like the pandemic.
Have you been watching that show, The 100, on Netflix, where everybody But anyway, just planning that. We've been bringing in Pork Belly every week, and Taps has been doing these really great specials with it. We did some really nice barbecued cauliflower for all you vegetarians out there. So, yeah, man, just having fun with the season and having a good time.
Well, hopefully the next couple weeks we'll be announcing a date for your hoedown.
Hell yeah.
Justin, you have a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah, I got a lot on.
Spit it. I don't even know, if you don't mind, how much is one of your 9-week classes?
So it starts at $500. So that's like
very reasonable.
Yeah,
that's
totally. Good.
So and that's for the self-paced person who is, you know, I just want the content. I want to be able to like ask questions in the student community, and like I don't really need that much hands-on help. But for the person who wants a little bit of extra coaching, who wants to be in some of the live sessions and do some of that role-playing stuff with conversations, especially that I was talking about earlier, that goes up to $1,000. And then my you know, high-tier one where I do a lot of one-on-one stuff, there's in-person stuff that's involved, that's $3,000, and that's as high as it goes. You know, it's not a $20,000 program.
No, that's pretty amazing. Cool. So totally. That's the classes. Podcast, you said you're kind of chilling out right now?
Yeah, or? I mean, it's definitely getting back to it. I'm you know, like, this is one of the shows that I'm, you know, doing in my kind of reemerging from the paternity leave cave. Yeah. But, you know, getting some in-person stuff with either some of my old chef homies or even just doing some remote stuff because, you know, chefs are busy. But that's called the Repertoire Podcast, and so it's really focused on, like, a combination of, like, how I built this, but really, like, really not getting into the, like, what inspires you about creating your menu? Like, I don't ask those types of questions. I'm very much so. Like, you know, talk to me about, you know, stories of you coming up. Talk to me about, you know, like how you're, you know, deciding what concepts to open, like the nitty gritty industry stuff that I think like real chefs, you know, kind of like geek out about. Yeah. And then, you know, I would love to say I was doing more pop-ups, but like focusing so much on teaching right now with season 3, The Bear, coming out. Like if you just search my name on YouTube, I'd love to, you know, break down the season 3 with all the industry nerds on that amazing show.
Cool.
Do you ever think that they'll create like a mock kitchen for people to get that intense feeling and try to function in it? Because I've always wanted to
I think about that a lot.
I've always wanted to rob a bank and get that feeling. Like when you walk in and put a couple rounds in the ceiling and tell everybody get on the fucking ground. Like I always wanted that feeling.
And some people just want to like make a stock. So
they have those smash rooms or what are they called?
It's the
kitchen equivalent. Like
Joe McHale to come up behind you, just yell at you. Yeah.
Great. Boom.
I love it. Let's see. I just posted my summer schedule.
Dude, it looks intense.
I'm gonna die. But it's I'm really excited, and you can see it on the Katua Instagram. But some of the fun stuff. I'm really excited about the Kentucky Derby in a couple weeks. I just saw the call sheet and it's like all the fucking homies
are
working.
Are you gonna wear a big floppy hat and some big old sunglasses?
No, I'm gonna work a lot. make 10,000 meals. Supposedly we're gonna be cooking for presidents, so that's gonna be cool.
Sick.
Let's see. Gonna be doing Lenny at the Gorge. That's enough. I'm not gonna. They had to do a background check on me, so shut the fuck up. Let's see. A lot of Ballard FC, a lot of farmers markets, whatever. You'll find me out of the summer. Working on two more pop-ups. I just talked to Heather Garcia yesterday, and I think we're going to decide. The one I came up with last week, I think we're going to wait till May of 2025, but it's gonna, we're going to start working on it now. It's going to be one of the most thought-out things we've ever done, and I'm so fucking excited about it. The other one, hopefully October 26th, but we're still working on it. Let's see. I think that's about it. Fucking went a little bit over. Sorry, guys. It's time to go spend money on food. The summer's here, so Seattle, spend us some money. Thanks for hanging out and joining us.
Be looking forward to the sober karaoke, hopefully.
Okay, sober karaoke. Let's do it.
All right, guys, we'll see you next time on
the
Seattle
Restaurant
Podcast. Holy shit, that's the first time
I know, man. That was
see
amazing.
See you next time. Bye.
Thanks, guys.